Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, August 8th, 2013. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, we wrap up our episodes from Philadelphia with a visit to Earth, Bread, and Brewery in the Mount Airy neighborhood of Philadelphia, where owners Tom Baker and Peggy Zwerver are bringing together beer and bread with a sustainable approach. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james, and our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. We're on Google Plus, too. And thanks to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. You know how that works. Whenever you have the itch to shop on Amazon, go to our website first, basicbrewing.com. Click on the Amazon banner there. It'll take you to the Amazon.com site, and you will shop as usual. The only difference is that we get a chunk of what you buy, and it won't cost you any extra, but it helps us out a great deal, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well that work in a similar fashion. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, the Stitcher app, and on the Windows Phone directory, too. Check out our Brewer's Logbook at BasicBrewingShop.com. In the front is a blank calendar that you can use to track your fermentations and plan your brews. And in the back, there's room to log up to 50 batches of brew and all the details associated with those. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to BasicBrewing.com/support. Thanks to everybody who has done so already. Protect your precious beer with one of our growler bags. Check those out also at BasicBrewingShop.com. It has been a fun week so far. Steve Wilkes and I spent the weekend in Salt Lake City for the Beehive Brew-Off homebrew competition. You'll hear more about that in next week's show. It was great to see Douglas Wierzynski, the man who started the movement to legalize homebrewing in Utah way back in 2008 when he was a law student. Douglas is all grown up now with a family and a private practice and doing well. It's good to see him. It was also good to see Jamie Burnham and Mark Alston from the Beer Nut, the homebrew shop there in Salt Lake City that has been very supportive of our basic brewing endeavor practically since the beginning. So great to see them. In addition to next week's show, I'm going to do a write-up about the Beehive Brew-Off on beerandwinejournal.com. So keep a lookout for that. Also keep a lookout for a series of articles running right now on beerandwinejournal.com that Chris Colby has been writing on sort of deconstructing how to make the perfect pale ale. So look out for that as well. I also have aspirations to write up an article for a Beer and Wine Journal about the tasting of the sour mash beer that Fossil Cove in Fayetteville brewed based on my homebrew recipe. And I am very happy and very relieved to report that the beer turned out very well. It is very tart. Some say a little more tart than we were expecting, but I like it. I like sour beers, so I like it a lot. And Ben Mills at Fossil Cove has been serving that sour beer with a traditional German Woodruff and raspberry syrups, as you would with a Berliner Weiss. And he got those from Andy Sparks's shop, thehomebrewery.com, by the way. You know, I don't know if you're picky. I don't know if this beer would technically fit the guidelines for a Berliner Weiss. One reason is that it's got a little bit of rye in it. But man, it really goes well with those syrups. And by itself, in my opinion, it's very refreshing and tasty and only, I think, 3.7% alcohol by volume. So it's probably at the upper end of the Berliner Weiss scale, but, you know, who cares? It's delicious. And congratulations to Ben. And we will be posting a video episode and an audio episode with more details on that beer. Very exciting. A quick look at the mailbag shows that brewers are looking for advice with their homegrown hops. Andy from Ohio writes, I'm gearing up for my homegrown hop harvest. This year's Cascade Harvest is looking to be a good one here in Ohio. I was curious if you had any recipes you could recommend for a pale ale or IPA using wet homegrown Cascades. And then Bill from Farmington, New York writes, I tried growing some Cascade hops, and they are looking really good. I've been reading up on wet hopping and was wondering if that was a topic that you had covered yet. If not, maybe it would be good timing since we are going to be heading into the time when they will be ready soon. Well, as you know, I harvested my Cascades already back in June and wrote an article about that on beerandwinejournal.com. I know that we've talked about using fresh hops on the show probably several times. It seems like we did a show with someone from Rogue talking about using fresh hops. First of all, I have to say, if you know Tom Schmidlin and you're around him, don't call them wet hops. Call them fresh hops. Or if you do know Tom and just want to irritate him, go ahead and call them wet. And then refer to the hop cones as whole leaf while you're at it. But anyway, when you're using hops picked fresh off the vine and not dried yet, the advice that I have heard on using them is to use about three times the hops by weight that you would normally use. And this is because the water that is still in the hops weighs about that much. When I dry homegrown hops, either on a screen over time or with a food dehydrator, I usually stop drying them when they're about a third to a quarter of their original weight before I vacuum seal them and throw them in the freezer. And second, in addition to accounting for that extra water weight, the common advice is to use commercial hops for your bittering addition. This is because you don't know the alpha acid level of your homegrown hops unless you send them off to a lab. So save your hops for the end of the boil where you can get the most out of their flavor and aroma. So, you know, just find your favorite pale ale or IPA recipe and, you know, bitter in the beginning with those commercial hops and then use yours at the end of the boil. And I got a little more than 13 ounces of Cascades out of my garden this year so far. Sometimes I have a second harvest depending on the severity of the heat. So we'll see on that. There are a few cones left on the vines. I need to use them in a beer soon. I haven't brewed in a long time. Been out of town, been busy. Insert your excuse here. Okay, let's move on to our visit to Earth Bread and Brewery. And many thanks once more to Brian Colasar of thebrewlounge.com for driving us around and showing around his hometown of Philadelphia. According to Brian, we covered 130 miles visiting the five awesome breweries that we visited. And also I have to throw out a thanks to Michael Tonsmeyer for the advice on which breweries to visit. Three of the five that we visited were on the top of Mike's list, and so we appreciate that as well. And I have to start the introduction to this by apologizing. I was a bit sloppy in my note-taking, so I got Peggy's name wrong. I lumped her in with Tom as a baker, but her name is actually Peggy Zwerver, so very sorry about that. And I also began the conversation saying we were in the Mount Mary neighborhood instead of the Mount Airy neighborhood. So I don't know if it was just the fact that, you know, this was the fourth out of five visits to the breweries or, you know, my age on the confusion and the not hearing right. I don't know. Insert your excuse here, but despite my absent-mindedness, we did have a wonderful visit with Tom and Peggy. Earthbred and Brewery is yet another place that I wish was much closer to my house. Probably good for my waistline that it's not, but it's it's obvious that they care a lot about their how their business is run and about what comes out of their fermenters and their oven. And about that, halfway through this interview, Tom walked away from the table. Kind of concerned me at first, but he came back a couple minutes later with a pitcher full of wonderful Saison drawn off one of the fermenters. And I tell you, if you like Saisons, if you like brewing Saisons or want to brew a good Saison, stay tuned for some interesting details on how Tom brews some tasty examples of that style. We're here at Earth Bread and Brewery in Philadelphia in the Mount Mary neighborhood with Tom and Peggy Baker. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Welcome. Thanks for coming.
Hello.
This is a beautiful place.
Thanks.
And, you know, we always say that bread and beer goes together well, and you guys are putting that into practice.
Mm-hmm. Tom loves everything to do with yeast.
Well, Tom, tell us about the philosophy behind this place.
Well, we actually, see if I can be quick with this. We had a production brewery before this that was very small and tiny, boutique-ish, if you will, called Heavyweight Brewing. It was out of New Jersey, and we were in existence for about 7 years, and then it became apparent that it was more of a hobby than a business making venture. So to do something where we can make a bit of money, we wanted to do a more of a retail operation. Originally it was an exercise for me being that I closed my brewery and didn't have a lot to do, of seeing if I could fashion in my mind, at least or on paper, a really sustainable restaurant. Everybody knows restaurants are very wasteful. I mean, they throw away a lot of food, and so it was something to keep me occupied. And then at the end of the day, when I had a business plan, it looked like we could actually do something. So the brewery aspect obviously is important to our mission here, but being a really green and sustainable restaurant is really paramount and really upfront in terms of everything we do.
And Peggy, why this location?
The market, the beer crowd in Philly is amazing. There's so many beers in Philly, and we always sold well from Heavyweight in Philadelphia. We knew it couldn't be in New Jersey. New Jersey's brew pub scene is pretty lacking, and the licenses are so high. I mean, it's the most densely populated state. It's just so hard to get a liquor license, and they're quite expensive. And friends of ours that live in Philly had told us about Mount Airy and thought that our business model would just fit so perfectly in Mount Airy because it's such a diverse, liberal, eco-minded neighborhood, and it really truly has been a great fit for us.
I said Mount Mary earlier. It's been a long day.
Mount Airy.
So everything, Peggy, you said earlier, everything in the place comes from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Everything has been reused. What do you mean by that?
Well, I'm like a Craigslist queen, so I bought everything that I could think of for the restaurant from Craigslist. Tom and I would go to auctions from restaurants that had closed. We had friends that either sold or gave us materials. Actually, our first set of tables were all from Victory Brewing, and when they decided to redecorate, they let us buy all of their tables. The chairs are all from auction. The bars are both from two previous bars. The flooring is actually from Craigslist, from a warehouse. The wood was on the walls. It had never been stained. It was beautiful. So that was our thing, try and buy as little new as we could.
And your brew house is also from somewhere else, too.
It is, yeah. It's the original Heavyweight Brewery, and purchased in 1999. And that was also had some used components in it. The brew house was new. I bought it from somebody who actually bought it and couldn't use it, so it was kind of used in that way, but it wasn't had never been brewed upon. And some of my fermenters were used, and back in '99, there was a kind of a falling out, if you guys remember, about so many craft breweries opening and not really having good quality product, and so the used equipment market was pretty flush. Where nowadays, obviously, people are doing it. They have their place in the right, their heart in the right place, and they're really focused on quality. And as a result, there's no used equipment out there. But if we ever did another project, I don't know if we'd be able to source it used.
Lots of people are going to China nowadays, unfortunately. So, what is your philosophy from the beer side of things?
I really love the brew pub model where you know, I don't really have to make the same beer all the time. We're pretty fortunate. We have 7 guest lines where we can bring in really good beer from friends of ours that have breweries. You know, we always have Victory and Philly Brewing Company. We're big fans of those breweries, and so that allows me to brew whatever I want. And I think that's like that's kind of the home brewing ethic, you know, made somewhat larger. I like malty beers, and I tend to focus on more malt forward beers. I don't have anything, you know, against hops. I love hops, but there's just so many hoppy beers out there. It doesn't seem like people are really exploring the things you can do with all the quality and cool malts that are available now. So I tend to, you know, brew styles that are more in that kind of range.
Much to the chagrin of our IPA fans.
But you can have a guest tap that's an IPA.
Exactly, sure. Exactly. A wheat beer. We can always have a wheat beer from our guest brewers. And I like Belgian styles a lot, you know, which tend to be more malty, I think. But, you know, we're doing a series of saisons right now. I have 2 in the tanks, and we're going to brew 2 additional ones. So my hope is that in maybe late July is to have 4 saisons on tap, which would be pretty cool. Yeah. So first one's a spiced one. It's got some lemongrass and lime zest, all DuPont yeast, so very flavorful yeast. And then the second one's a hop bomb. Because you have to do it. It's all Amarillo hops, coveted Amarillo hops. And then the third one's going to be a blueberry beer, really tart blueberries from New Jersey, local, organic. And then the last one will be like a re-envisioned porter or stout in a saison disguise. You know?
It seems like we had some... From where we were before, the forest in Maine, they have also been playing with the saison yeasts and different styles. And it seems like the saison is a very malleable style that lends itself to all those different things.
Right. Yeah. And it's the, you know, it's the new darling, I think, among the at least it seems like in the Philly area, people love their saisons. So Tired Hands has definitely hit on something. I mean, they do the English style ales, which is kind of cool. I think Forest of Maine is a kind of a similar construct to their place, but doing saisons, yeah, I mean, they lend itself to a lot of different spicing and different treatments, and be it in like wine barrels and things like that. So it's a cool thing for a brew pub to play around with.
So I've got to ask you, I've got to be selfish from the homebrewer side of things. What are the keys to making a good saison based beer?
Wow, I don't know. I'm still trying to come to speaking terms with the Saison DuPont yeast. We have a kind of a rocky relationship, but so far this current I got a lab culture, so you know, a liquid culture from one of the yeast labs, which has a tiny bit of Chico yeast in it, American ale yeast, and I think that might be the key. Because the main workhorse, the saison yeast, produces a lot of the flavor and does most of the work, and then the American ale yeast just finishes the attenuation, so you get a drier result, you know, end product. So maybe that's it. I don't know. That was suggested by the yeast lab after I told them I had issues with the yeast attenuating for me. But you gotta throw caution in the wind with the saison yeast and let it go. Like I've learned from a couple other people who make saisons and make them well is to knock out your wort, you know, warm, you know, like 80s, which, you know, homebrewers must love because who hates chilling their wort down, and then just let it rise. Don't try and keep it cool. Like the last two saisons I fermented were in the 93 to 94 range. And the DuPont yeast is nice in that it doesn't produce a tremendously greater amount of esters at that temperature. It just finishes quicker, which is a good thing, you know. I mean, well, for a production brewer anyway.
So you don't control the temperature at all, or do you control it at the beginning? You just let it go.
Just let it go, and then it seems to, at least in my experience for this month of June, where it's been fermenting, my basement's kind of warm, it stays in that mid-90 range, 93, 94, and then when it's finished fermenting, it starts going. It's like 83 right now. It's just finishing up fermentation. It's like just under 2 Plato, which is nice. What is that, 1008? I'm sorry, I don't know the specific gravity.
Like that, yeah.
So you're using that mixture. Do you harvest that and repitch it into another batch? I mean, are you concerned about the ratio, the mixture changing over time?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I guess the initial amount of cells, the American yeast cells, were small in comparison to the slurry of saison yeast. But yeah, I don't know. It's probably going to change. One of the yeasts I used to use in Heavyweight, I used to make a beer called Lunacy, which is a Belgian golden ale, and it had the Schoof yeast that was mixed with a little Westmalle. And what would happen is after, because I made that beer all the time, I repitched, you know, I would try and get 15, 20 generations out if I could. And what would happen at the end is the Westmalle is completely gone at the 15th generation. Huh. So maybe it's a little more powdery, it doesn't flocculate as well or something like that. But because the Westmalle is nice, it dries out, it's a lot more attenuative than the Schoof strain. And so in the beginning, I got really, really low gravities. And then I noticed, and that's when I noticed that the gravities would start to climb as I repitched, you know, into above 10 generations. And then it kind of made sense that, you know, I wasn't getting as much Westmalle character, and that it was, for one reason or another, it wasn't being harvested, you know, in the cone.
So, Peggy, just are your eyes glazing over during this conversation, are you tied into the work in the brew house?
No, I don't do anything in the brew house, but Tom and I have been together for about 25 years, and most of that he was brewing, so I understand what he says. I don't get involved in it physically, but and he bounces things off me, but you know.
and I don't get involved in a restaurant, and that's why we get along so well. I let her take care of the restaurant, and she lets me take care of the brewery. It works out pretty well.
Well, I mean, let's switch gears for just a minute then, and give Tom a rest. And Steve Wilkes is here. I don't know that I introduced you at the beginning, but you were drooling over that. It's not a pizza oven, I guess. Or is it a pizza oven? You don't call what you...
We call it a wood-burning oven.
Because you don't make pizzas, you make flatbreads, right?
Right, right. You do flatbread.
So what do you think about that?
I thought it was awesome. I was just drooling over having one. I mean, I'm so jealous. I would like to have that in my backyard, you know?
We've actually had two local customers each build an oven in their backyards because they were inspired by ours.
So tell us about the process. You know, what's the difference between a regular old pizza and flatbread?
Well, we make our dough 24 hours in advance and ferment it in cold temperatures so that it's got a lot of time for the yeast to develop and yield more flavor. So we think it's closer to bread than pizza.
A little chewier texture, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice chew to our crust. Yeah.
That's the hardest thing I think about being if you make pizza at home, the crust is the thing you can't get right.
Yeah, usually, I mean, we bake at 650 to 700 degrees, and you really can't get your oven hot enough. I know people that have disengaged the cleaning mechanism on their oven so it doesn't lock so that they can get it up to like 500, 550, just so they can do pizzas. But, I mean, a lot of people are barbecuing and grilling pizzas now, too, so that gives it a nice flavor.
So is that the what other things are on the menu? Is it? I don't want to say just flatbreads, but I mean, but it seems like such a simple concept, and it seems so perfect to me.
Well, since Tom and I hadn't had any restaurant experience prior to him brewing, we were both in IT. We were both analyst programmers, so never having opened a restaurant, we really thought that the focus should be on a simple menu. We don't have a full bar. We do beer and wine so that we can concentrate on each of those. And our entree is flatbread. We have an awesome chef right now who has really expanded the things that we offer. We have always had salads and a cheese plate and soups. We have a pastry chef that makes desserts, but she's really expanded and made all kinds of specials. But flatbreads are still the basis of our menu.
And what, since Tom thinks out of the box with the beers, does that that I guess that gives you the freedom to think out of the box with the flatbreads as well.
Yeah, and I don't have all that much input anymore in that menu, but I mean, we've done things like macaroni and cheese flatbread. We've put oysters, we've put salmon, we've put spaghetti, you name it. Right now, one of our dessert flatbreads is a s'more flatbread with graham crackers, chocolate chips, and marshmallow, just like you would do on a campfire. So you can pretty much put anything you want on there.
So let's talk about, I mean, you were talking about reusing everything in the restaurant. You're also talking about sustainability as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we try to all through the growing season we support local farmers. So there's a number of farms in the area, and we try and buy as much produce as we can from them. And we're big composters, so we like to see the whole life cycle of we're composting at the farm where we are buying produce. They're actually trying to grow barley this year, so we're hoping to collaborate and have a beer with their barley, hopefully get some local hops, and have a truly local beer.
So does that mean malting your own barley?
Yeah, we're going to give that a try. It'll be a very small batch with this first crop, so we'll see how that works out. It looks beautiful so far. We went and visited it the other day.
Yeah, I give you kudos for at least attempting that, or at least wanting to attempt that.
Yeah, I've actually talked to a young couple who want to become maltsters, and someone knew of another person that's trying to do that. And I know that they have the whole local brewing community behind them to buy their malt, because that would be ideal. You know, no carbon footprint, local malt. It would be amazing.
And talk about, and we're upstairs. You said that this has always been a bar, this building. We're always housed bars. We're upstairs now. And you said that this was kind of a different environment from where we are now.
Yeah, it was carpeted with magenta carpeting, and the walls were sky blue, and there was a dance floor with mirrors on the walls, and it was a pretty creepy place, and the neighborhood was very happy to see it close and have a family-friendly place move in.
Now, we're from Arkansas, and a lot of people down there would not think of a bar as being family-friendly. Or a beer place as being family-friendly.
Well, it's funny because there, there's so many, like Beer Advocate, Rate Beer, Yelp, all these review sites. There are still plenty of people out there that come into a brew pub and see children and wonder what they're doing there. But we kind of see ourselves more as a restaurant than a brew pub. We don't have a truly busy bar scene, late into the night or whatever. Our beers are definitely an attraction, but I just kind of see us as more of a restaurant.
And I guess it's important that you do fit into the neighborhood.
In this neighborhood, it is. You win them over, and I don't know, they're very supportive, and Tom and I just always wanted to be an integral part of a neighborhood. Coming from New Jersey, you don't really have, we never really grew up in a neighborhood. You didn't, never saw your neighbors. It was, just a commuting town, when they went off to New York or wherever. So it's awesome for us to be living in and be such an integral part of a neighborhood.
What's been the biggest challenge in opening and then sustaining this business?
Employees. it was pretty eye-awakening for me, never having been a manager. Right now I have 40 employees. So in the restaurant business, you have a lot of people that can work 2 days a week. It's great for serving, and you have a full-time job, bartend a couple days a week. So it works out, really well for a lot of people just to do that as a side job. And it was a shock to me that oh, bartenders don't see that as a lifetime career, and they're not going to stay with me until they retire? You mean I just had to rehire someone after 6 months? So that's the biggest challenge, just keeping full staff. People go off, you know, my high school hostess is going off to college in September, so, you know, I'm constantly hiring a hostess, and people get a job in the career that they have a degree in, finally, so I lose them. So it's challenging in that way.
So, Tom, I don't want to let you get away without talking about the Maris Otter beer as well.
Okay.
Talk about that. It's delicious. It's all about the malt.
It is all about the malt. Maris Otter obviously is the malt varietal that I used in that, and it was 100%. It's 100% Maris Otter. There's no caramel or any kind of specialty malts in it. So really, to showcase that malt, which is, you know, really kind of delightful pale ale malt. And it's East Kent and Fuggles in it, you know. And surprisingly, it's American ale yeast. I didn't have access to. So you can do some tricks, like ferment it a little warmer and try and get a bit more esters out of that yeast to kind of mimic, an English pale ale. But, it's just a, really easy drinking, session. We do a lot of session beers here. You know, I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense for a brew pub because, you know, you want people to want to have a couple of them at least, you know, and still get home. So, although we do have a 7%+ beer right now, that's rare. Pretty much every few months I'll do something like that. But otherwise everything's like in 4 to 5%, 6% at the most. So, Maris Otter is I don't really know what to say about it. It's a pretty simple beer, but it is something I like to drink, so...
And what did you just pour us?
So I just poured you that came out of Leslie. That's the name of our fermenter. We have two fermenters, Leslie and Lynn.
My sisters.
Do you have sisters named Leslie and Lynn, or are the fermenters your sisters?
Oh.
Both.
Both, yes.
And it's a Saison yeast that we made, our Saison beer we made with the yeast we were just talking about. It's got a little bit of lemongrass and a little bit of lime zest in it. Just really, really mild. But, again, it just showcases that really wonderful yeast and what it can do. And this is all Pilsner malt. So the other thing we're doing with this series I told you about, it's actually called The Time of the Saisons. Zombies, right?
My favorite song, Time of the Season by the Zombies.
Saison means season, right? So The Time of the Saisons is the name of the series, and we're doing four of them. The first one was called Bandwagon-esque. There's a band called Teenage Fan Club. I'm a really big fan. So they have the idea was hopping on the bandwagon, you know, because everybody makes Saisons. Second one is, that's the one you're drinking now, by the way. The second one, the hoppy one I made, is called Automatic for the People, an R.E.M., great R.E.M. album. Because, you know, automatically people are going to drink this like there's no tomorrow. And the third one, the blueberry one, we're not really sure yet. We're still hashing out the names. But I'm thinking about Natural Blues, which is a Taj Mahal album, you know, since it's going to be a blueberry beer. But
Bobby Blue Bland just passed away. The great jazz, the great blues guy. You should honor him.
Yeah,
Bobby Blue Bland.
On top 50 albums all the time. He's always on there.
Yeah.
Blues albums. Brewing a lot of Saisons. I hope Tired Hands doesn't come after me, because I know they do that. But I'm kind of inspired by some of their beers. So yeah.
What I like about this is that it's kind of it's real fruit forward at first. You taste it; it's a little sweet. It's almost like having a little juice, a little orange juice or something. But then it finishes really dry, really nice. And so, boy, I could just like cook up a storm with this.
Yeah, and the whole I think the hallmark of this style too is a really nice tight carbonation on it. So, and I think that's going to make it a lot easier to drink. It'll be perceived a little bit drier with that. Some carbonic acid in it. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a great beer. I'm looking forward to it.
Is it going to add a little bit of bitterness as well, do you think?
I think so. Yeah, I think it'll. I mean, I didn't put very much hop in this. It's probably got about 18 IBUs, which is pretty low. Whereas the hop forward one I made, the second one I made, has 42 IBUs, so much more hop, much more bitterness, and much more drier and on the palate. But I don't know.
Refreshing. I like this a lot, a whole lot.
I could have this for breakfast instead of orange juice.
Tom probably wouldn't say it, but I think that Beer de Garde and Saisons, all farmhouse styles, that's really one of his specialties.
Well, I think that's a, I think that's apparent. Very well done. I know it's been. We've grabbed enough of your time. I know that you're a busy man, and I know that this has been with all these people in town wanting a piece of you. I appreciate your taking time out, and it's been an honor and a privilege to be with you guys.
Yeah, my pleasure. Have a great conference.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again to Tom and Peggy. And Peggy especially, Peggy spent a lot of time with us, showing us around the restaurant and visiting with us. And but when we came, the restaurant was pretty empty. But by the time we left, it was packed with families, mostly, sitting around their tables, ordering supper, and ending their day at this neighborhood gathering place. And I'm really happy that Steve, Andy, and I were able to visit. Just a wonderful place. And thanks one more time to Brian Colasar for spending a long but productive day behind the wheel, driving us around and exploring. That's all the stuff from Philadelphia and surrounding the National Homebrewers Conference. I'm really looking forward to Grand Rapids next year. You guys, you know, if you live around the Grand Rapids area, you're going to go to the Homebrew Conference and you want to be a part of the show, you want to design an experiment to talk about, you know, drop me a line. Next week, we go to Salt Lake City, so more out-of-town fun. If you have brewing questions in the meantime, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com, or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Our Basic Brewing growler bags are available in our shop. Protect your precious homebrew and craft beer as you take it from place to place. Check out our support link, where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. We'd like to expand our coverage, going to these different areas, and you can help by supporting us financially in one way or the other. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. You've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. And you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. Our brewer's logbooks are in the store. Keep track of up to 50 batches of beer. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. Boy, this week was really busy with people. Just a ton of, I don't know what happened. Tons of people. Maybe they're shopping to go to school. There are lots of books on there. We greatly appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are My Mother's Brisket and Other Love Songs, and Spalding In-Ground Basketball System with Glass Backboard, 60-inch. Very cool. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo or our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. Talk to you next time, everybody. So long.